Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
Siege, we'll get to all the reactions from player exit day on Monday in a moment. We have to get to this press conference that's coming on Friday with Leafs management. Can you run us through who's going to be there? Can you run us through why it would be on a Friday? Just seems like a very kind of spaced out between the players talking at the beginning of the week and then management at the end of the week. What do we need to know about this meeting?
I thought the Friday press conference was for you to address your suspension in ball hockey.
Oh, no. I told you that in confidence.
As the video shows, McKenzie approaches a player from behind and drives through the body.
Oh, no. Okay, well,
the Department of Player Safety has suspended Julian McKenzie for one game.
Okay, like, I did not hit him from behind. I hit him from the side.
Are you allowed to hit at all? Like, isn't this like rec league ball hockey?
You're allowed some measure of physicality in this.
Clearly,
league.
You went too far.
I hit the person from the side, and then it was a really dumb hit. They ended up tripping into my goaltender, but I did not hit them from behind. And this is unjust that I've been suspended for a game. Anyway, we're not here to talk about my ball hockey antics.
Sorry, but I mean the fact that you just casually dropped in that you've been suspended in ball hockey. That's the biggest news of the moment.
What are we
like?
Really
was there
doing?
A fight? Were you like swearing at
no.
the referees? Like, what
no.
was the scene?
It was just I hit this guy.
Do you have to like leave the gym? Like, are you like get off the property or like what's the protocol? Like, I can't believe someone could even get kicked out of a men's ball hockey league or like.
Come on, oh man! I was going for the ball. I knew the guy was on my side. I just kind of dropped his shoulder. I saw him fall. He went into my goalie, and my goalie looked really hurt. And I was like, ah, crap. I think I made a dumb hit. And then they were like, get out. And I'm like, just like whatever. Like, I wasn't even thinking about it too much. I kind of blacked out for a second. I didn't even know where I hit him. I just knew the dude was down. And then they're all like, yeah, you hit him from behind. I didn't think I hit him from behind, but that's what they said. And then just before we started recording, the league made the decision. I'm a goon now.
Can appeal or is this anyway?
Well, I'm going to miss that game anyway for other reasons. Can we please talk about the Leafs? I will never say that sentence again.
Can
we please talk about the Leafs?
We can. They lost in game 7 in overtime again.
Why did you start the show like this?
Well, because I literally think it's more interesting than what I'm about to say. That's why. You always go with your best content right at the top, bud.
You absolutely do. That's very fair. Okay. But, so what's going to happen with this press conference on Friday? I said meeting. I did mean meeting. I meant press conference.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's definitely a break from the Leafs' normal routine. Every team handles end of season a little differently. The Leafs typically in my time, which is, 15 plus years of doing these things, have done it all in one day, that being their players speaking, their head coach speaking, and then whichever members of management speak. I think partially, quite honestly, it's because this market is pretty loud as it is. And the more you delay it, the more you kind of open the conversation in the marketplace to be still being had. But the truth is, by having management go on Friday, you do allow a little bit of time for the dust to settle. You certainly allow for some decisions to be made or a path to be charted to some degree from the break at the end of the season. So it's a little bit maybe less of an emotional press conference and more of a, here's where we're at. This is how we enter the off season. This is what we're thinking. And specifically in this case, I do think that there's a decision still being deliberated about the future of head coach Sheldon Keefe. And, you know, it's not a slam dunk that it's going to go either way. I don't even want to handicap it or put percentages or anything like that on it. But, you know, the fact remains that as we record here on a Tuesday morning, 2 days after the end of the season, two and a bit, you know, it's not certain that Sheldon Keefe will be back. It's not certain that they're going to fire him. And so, you know, I think that the other notable part is there's been some speculation in Toronto specifically about the future of President Brendan Shanahan. The organization has brought in a new president above him, in Keith Pelley in the last month. And the fact that Pelley, Shanahan, and Brad Treliving, the Leafs GM, will be at the Friday morning press conference, I think is a pretty good sign that Shanahan's in the clear, that he will be back. But, you know, they're going to have to answer questions. Something has to change, right? I mean, they have been the kings of run it back. I don't think you can run it all back again. You know, I've thought before now in prior seasons, it was probably the time to move off this idea of a core four, not because any of those players individually are bad or anything like that. I just think there's too much of a price to be paid in a hard salary cap league to spend that much money on four forwards. It's not like, I have no doubt if they choose to move on from one or more of those players will go on and have success somewhere else. That's not how the conversation should be framed. I don't think this is about running somebody out of town. I don't think it's, you know, trying to say that, you know, you can't win with player X. I just don't think you can win with player A, B, C, D, and E if you want to even go to Morgan Riley. Like, spending that much on the top of your roster just does not leave enough to go to the bottom. And so I think a hard decision needs to be made. So that's a long way of saying the first shoe to drop for me is Sheldon Keefe either being confirmed as the coach that stays on or, you know, perhaps being fired. Then we get Friday's press conference. I would assume that will happen either in conjunction with that press conference or before it. And then we get into the off season. And obviously, you know, I think it will be kind of an interesting one in Toronto because the five players I just mentioned, management might even reach the conclusion one or more of them have to go. They all have no movement clauses. So there is a world where the Leafs management actually wants to shake things up at the top of the roster and isn't able to do so. And so, those are the answers we're looking for Friday. How do they proceed? How do they view this? How can they try to have it be a different outcome next spring than what we've seen the last eight springs?
I still think the move is to move on from Sheldon Keefe. I believe I've had that opinion from last season, but do you get that sense they're leaning either way when it comes to his future?
I think the feeling seems to be that there's not a clear upgrade on him out there, which doesn't, it's not the same thing, right? I mean, we've seen 17 coaches fired in the last 13 months. Rick Bowness, I'm sure we'll get to him a little bit later, but he retired from Winnipeg. So there's been 18. He's the 18th coach that has left his post in the last, I mean, more than half of the league has turned over its coach in the last year is basically what I'm getting at. Yep. And so clearly that's a trend in the league that when you are trying to make a change, a significant change, that is the change you can make most often. At a time when I think it's harder to move on from players, so many no movement clauses out there, so many big contracts that are difficult to trade. And so I do think that is a very distinct possibility that even in a world where, you know, they're not looking around saying, okay, there's like five coaches that are clearly better than Sheldon Keefe out there. We have to make this change. I don't think that's actually the karma. I think that's what's making it difficult is there's an internal view that Sheldon Keefe had a good season. I mean, the Leafs played a meaningful amount of games with their third goaltender in this regular season. They were missing significant chunks of their blue line. Even in the playoffs, they played three games without William Nylander, two games without Auston Matthews entirely, plus another three where he was dealing with illness or injury. And they still got to being one shot away. I mean, I think that there is a case he made that Sheldon Keefe actually had maybe his best season as a Leafs coach. That still doesn't change the fact that we're doing the breakdown day much sooner than the organization would hope or expect to see it. And so it's a kind of a weird set of circumstances. I mean, Sheldon Keefe is the fifth most tenured coach in the league. Three of the guys ahead of him have won a Stanley Cup with their team, that being John Cooper, Mike Sullivan, and Jared Bednar. The fourth most tenured coach, one spot ahead of Keefe, is Rod Brind'Amour, who's won a series, at least one series in all 6 years he's been the Hurricanes coach. His team's still playing, so there's still a chance for him maybe to add a Stanley Cup to his roster. And the Leafs in that window of time have only won the one playoff series. So, you know, Sheldon said it himself. I thought he acquitted himself very nicely, Julian. I don't know if you saw his any parts of his interview, but he saw bits and pieces. Yeah, he took responsibility and he said it's a results business. We didn't get results. We didn't meet expectations. Yep. As the head coach, that's on me. And ultimately what that might mean is when it comes time to make a decision about the first big change that they're going to make this offseason, it might end up being him. Not saying he's necessarily the most deserving, but he's the easiest one to make that decision on because all they need to do is pay him some money, and MLSE has lots of money. But they could have even more money had they played into the spring, right? I mean, like, a lot has got left on the table by this team over those years where they've fallen short. I mean, there's a real price to be paid for losing six straight game sevens, because that was at least two more home games in each of the next rounds and possibly three or four that you're passing up. Not that we're worried about MLSE's finances, but I'm just saying that there's downstream effects when you don't have the success that they wanted. And, you know, they coughed on it, man. Again.
Like,
it's hard not to see it that way.
I want this is just
an and Boston's a really good team. Sorry, I'm not hating on the Bruins. Like,
no, they did what they needed to do, and I still can't believe that play that won the series. The dump in off the board, and then David Pastrnak is first to it. Like, I still can't believe that play worked out, and it caught everybody napping. Ilya Samsonov, Morgan Rielly. A lot of people have been throwing some blame onto Mitch Marner for his role in all this too. Can we actually go through that play? Like, is it as straightforward as Mitch Marner should have just had David Pastrnak as he enters the zone? I mean, at first I was of that thinking, but I'm not so sure anymore.
No, there's a line change that happens there with Tyler Bertuzzi. And so the way the Leafs defend that play in the neutral zone, I don't think the onus necessarily is on Mitch Marner. I mean, it was a weird play. Like, at sometimes, as much as I realize we're going to want to sling arrows in every direction here, sometimes you got to tip your cap to the other team.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny. William Nylander actually pointed out, he's like, that's a play you might see occasionally in the regular season where a team pulls something like that off. But it's like they never seen the Bruins try that in the playoffs. And I'm not making excuses, but it was weird. Like, even in the building, it was weird. Like, it was like, what the hell just happened? Like, there's been no space in this whole game for either team. Like, both teams defended really hard to finish out that series. And all of a sudden you have Pastrnak with speed with the puck on his stick and a chance in alone on the goalie. I mean, the worst guy, if you're the Leafs side of that, you know, the Leafs had a breakaway in that game. And with respect to him, it was Connor Duehr who had a breakaway, yeah. Right? I mean, that, you know, you'd much rather have, like, in game two, an Austin Matthews breakaway, or in game six, a William Nylander breakaway. I mean, both of those ended up in the net, much like the David Pastrnak, maybe not call it a breakaway, but in alone, on Samsonov. And so it was a strange play. The Leafs, the funny part about all of this is they literally probably played the best defensive hockey I've ever seen collectively the Leafs team play in years.
I agree.
In games five and six, specifically to force game seven, but even game seven, I mean, it wasn't like they gave up a ton of great A's. They didn't trade chances. They were patient in the game.
It's the best I've seen them defend the front of the net.
Yeah. And they're doing it with a blue line that is clearly inferior to pretty much anyone they were going to face in the playoffs. I mean, if there's an area where I would argue if they're taking away from their forwards and going to have a bit more money to spend, I would say beefing up the blue line would be probably the biggest priority for the organization. But, you know, all that being said, just push it aside, push whoever was in and out of the lineup or out of the lineup. They found a way. You know, Boston didn't have a lead in any of the last three games of the series. So, you know, that tells you what you need to know. They got to being down 3-1 and the Leafs really tightened up and played the sort of style that wins you playoff games. And it won them two and gave them a chance to win a third that would have sent them to the second round. They fell short. So, you know, the problem, though, ultimately is you still have to view this across eight seasons to me or five. Yeah. Like, maybe you don't go back to when, you know, Marner, Matthews and Nylander were rookies because, you know, it's a bit apples to oranges at this point. I mean, we're talking about, you know, players that have become men that are at the peak of kind of what they will be individually, you would think, in their careers just by their ages. And, you know, the mix has not worked. And I think a lot of it is, quite frankly, due to they haven't had enough money to spend elsewhere on the roster to get through even the first round consistently, let alone going on long playoff runs. If they bring all four of them back, it's going to be a hard, it's going to be a hard story to sell, put it that way, that that anything is going to be different when it really matters next year in the playoffs.
Before we get to some quotes, just listening to you talk about how Sheldon Keefe's season is going, and I get that his future is up in the air, but seeing that Keith Pelley, Brendan Shanahan, and Brad Treliving are going to be at that press conference on Friday, this is just an early read for me. It seems like there's going to be a they're going to run it back, especially with all those guys on NMCs as well. This smells of them running it back. I mean, I hope for the sake of the Leafs and their fans, I hope I'm wrong, because they really need to make some changes. But it kind of sounds like they are going to run this back.
Well, we need to underline this and highlight it with like yellow marker here. It doesn't even matter if they don't want to run it back. They might not have the chance to run it back. Like how hard a ball do you want to play with Mitch Marner or John Tavares? You know, two players that have no movement clauses, that have 1 year left on their deals, that I do think under the right circumstances, both of them have heavily front loaded contracts. So, you know, in Tavares's case, you might say, yeah, he's getting towards, he's not an $11 million player and he has an $11 million cap hit, but the actual money owed to him is much less than that. Like there are definitely teams in the league that in a perfect world would use John Tavares next year. But I just don't know. Are you going to go to your captain and the guy who chose you in free agency and strong arm him into leaving or trying to? Can you go to Mitch Marner and have that conversation? I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I don't expect them to reveal their plan for that at a press conference on Friday. But I mean, that is definitely a dynamic that they are weighing behind the scenes. Like, do we do that? Is there upside? Can we make a trade that makes sense? So you're right. It does reek of running it back, but the running it back, they lost the chance to have a say in that last year. You know, Mitch Marner did not have a no movement clause, neither did William Nylander, till July 1st. So there was a window from when they lost their last game, which I believe was May 2nd, or something like that, May 2nd-ish, to till July 1st, where they could have contemplated moving either of those players without, you know, them having to consent to the contract. The same was true for Austin Matthews. I just don't think in a practical manner of speaking that was ever going to be something they'd weigh doing. Mostly because he's a center too, right? I mean, he's, in addition to being the game's most dangerous goal scorer, he plays center, which is a premium position and it is harder to replace just on par than wingers. So they lost that ability last year. And I think that was the sort of great unknown. I mean, this Aaron Leafs history, like if they never go on and win anything of consequence as a team, which is becoming obviously far more possible than not, just given the age curves and where they're at and how it's gone. And I mean, there's definitely room for a second act, the way Pittsburgh had a second act, the way Boston had a second act. You know, Boston injected McAvoys and Pasternak and younger players in and you know, they still had another good run with Bergeron and Chara, you know, getting older and Marchand and the like that could happen in Toronto, but they're going to have to inject some skill. They're going to have to hope that Easton Cowan, who just won the OHL's Rookie of the Year, their first round pick last year, becomes a player. You know, Matthew Nyes looks like a player. I don't know if you had a chance to watch the series, Julian, but man, he took a noticeable step.
I think, and maybe this is a take, I think he played like the best forward in that series. He did the dirty work in the corners. He got chances on net. He won a game in OT. That great setup with William Nylander in game six, leading to that breakaway. Matthew Nyes made a hell. He looks like an untouchable in all of this. Like he's
it's
the guy
like he
they
realized
need.
He's the biggest, strongest guy on the ice, or one of the biggest, strongest guys.
Absolutely.
On the ice.
He played amazing in that series.
But I'll tell you, his season wasn't poor, but his season was very up and down, and you didn't see a lot of that in the regular season. Like, I think that's if you're looking for some positives, you've come out of that series as the Leafs, you're like, when Joseph Woll played, wow. Like, that's in a drafted and developed goaltender. When Matthew Nyes, like, in the biggest games, when the pressure was on, like, who stood up? Matthew Nyes. Like, those are great signs. Now, the bad sign would be, well, Joseph Woll didn't play game seven. That somehow, yet again, I'm just saying, he missed a significant chunk of time in the season, 12 weeks with a high ankle sprain. When the most important game came, his body didn't allow him to play. He's had injuries consistently pretty much every year. you know, I'm not suggesting he pulled the shoot, but it's more like what's going on with his body, his training. Like, is there a way that they can ensure this doesn't happen? Because I think the Leafs were ready to have him take the reins this season, and he grabbed them. Obviously, he won games 5 and 6 and played outstanding, but you know, they needed him to be more reliable. So there were some positives there, but they're going to need more drafting and developing, it would seem, to have a second run with this group, or they're going to need to make some home run trade. I mean, maybe there is a trade for Mitch Marner out there that gets them back a defenseman, like it's someone that you can put on your top pairing and is going to be here for 5 years or something like that. I mean, you know, I don't think that is an easy trade to make. You probably need some things to come together, but you know, this is the exercise now in front of management. I just don't think they may have to bring back all four forwards next year, but it's going to be just for, like, I can't imagine they're doing that well extending Tavares and Marner. Like I think you're basically probably walking them to free agency if you do that, just because clearly, like I feel like I'm hitting my head on the wall, man.
You can't do this again. You can't go through this again. We all see it. One other thing with Joseph Woll, though, you mentioned the injuries. You mentioned the injuries with him.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think the Leafs would still be confident enough in him to be their number one next year? Do you see them saying, hey, maybe let's get a veteran in the offseason to kind of work in tandem with him? Maybe they make a home run trade there. There's probably going to be a few ones available this offseason.
I think they're probably getting two veterans, would be my calculation. I mean, Samsonov, Martin Jones, and Matt Murray are all pending UFAs. Now, it's possible one of those players is back. It's too soon to say one way or the other that way, but I would think that they're signing at least two veteran goaltenders with some NHL track record, just to have, you know, one of them will be kind of slotted unofficially in the number three spot. But right now, I don't think you can say 100% Joseph Woll is their number one, because there's too many questions about the injury history, frankly. And I think that'll be something that they dive into this summer a little bit, is, you know, is there something about his training? Is there something they can change? Right. I mean, if it's sort of like how my view on the roster, if you want a different outcome, you've got to change something. I mean, if Joseph Woll is to have a healthy season, now some things are bad luck, of course, like injuries are part of the sport that players in all positions, all age classifications in junior hockey and college hockey in the NHL and the AHL, I mean, players get injured, but it's been a troubling pattern, I'd say, in Woll's case. And you know, it's pretty costly in the end. I'm not hanging game 7 on Samsonov. You only allowed 2 goals. You gave your team a chance to win. But that being said, like the tying goal and his teammates definitely had a chance to clear the puck. So again, he's not alone on this, but you know, he doesn't seal off his post. He's beat short side. And, you know, I don't know about the last one. I mean, Pasternak gets in alone on you. Easy for me to sit in the press box, like chewing on my Mike and Ike's or whatever the candy they serve there, the TD Garden press box, and be like, well, I should have poked
in that press box.
Yeah, but he should have poke checked him. It's like, okay. I mean, yes. And no, like, probably shouldn't have let David Pasternak in alone on your goaltender in overtime. I mean, that's, I have a bigger issue with that probably than Sam, but point being, if Woll was in the net, maybe it's different. Who knows? If William Nylander plays the first 3 games, maybe it's different. Those things didn't happen and the Leafs didn't find a way. And I think, you know, they are facing real fatigue in this market, from the fan base, probably from the media too, to a degree, about just same old. Like, I don't know how you bring it back. Seriously. Like it was already awkward enough to go through an end of season day on Monday with this team. If they're bringing back all the same pieces, and I'm just fast forwarding to September 16th or whatever day we're doing the welcome to camp, and it's just like same questions, same guys. We're close. You're not close.
It's gonna be groundhog. You're not close. You're not close,
dude. It takes 16 wins to win the Stanley Cup. The Leafs have 16 playoff wins in their last 5 playoffs combined.
Oh, that's painful.
Like, that's everybody. Painful. Over the years, I said, well, it's like Ovechkin's Capitals had to learn how to win, and Yzerman's Red Wings. Ovechkin's Capitals consistently were getting out of the first round before they eventually got a Stanley Cup. Yzerman went to, I think, 2 or 3 conference finals with the Red Wings, and they went to a Stanley Cup final in 95 before winning for the first time in 97. Like, they were knocking at the door in a more meaningful way. The Leafs have not, other than the one weird year in the pandemic, they've not won their division in the regular season. They've not won a President's Trophy. And they've only won 1 first round series and then got their ass handed to them immediately right after that happened. And so they have been a top team by points. They have won lots of individual awards as their players. You know, we've seen Matthews and Marner and Nylander rewrite the team's record book. Like their names are all over those things, but they have not as a team been anywhere close to winning a Stanley Cup. And so I don't even think we should allow them to have that conversation to start next year if they haven't made significant changes. I mean, I just, you know, in theory we can say, and I know we've talked about our show, like, oh, there's, you know, there's parity in the league. Like any team could win. I mean, yes and no. There is the odd team that catches fire and you don't see it, but there's not really that many surprises. I saw a lot of people go like 6-2, 7-1 with their first round picks because by and large, it was a pretty predictable first round when the dust settled. And the Leafs predictably are done, is my point.
A lot of facts being spewed just now by CJ. Let's get to what was said yesterday.
Let me take another haul of my coffee here.
What are your takeaways from exit day? Who said something that really caught your ear and made your eyebrows stand? Let's go through exit day.
William Nylander brought a little bit of edge, but it, what I would mean is positive edge.
Yeah.
Like I don't mean that I'm like, oh my God, how could he be? But he was like pushing back on some of the questions. Again, in a polite way, like in a professional way. He showed a degree of defiance that, frankly, I like. Like, William Nylander had a tremendous season. He arrived, if we're going to do the whole, like, first day, last day thing, he arrived with the story on the first day camp. You didn't get a contract. Like, how are you going to deal with the pressure of having to earn your next deal, and how's this going to play out? He has a ridiculous start to the season, including single-handedly pretty much winning the Leafs 2 games in Stockholm in front of like 80 family and friends, earns his monster deal, gets close to 100 points. I know he fell just a little short. Unfortunately, has to miss time with like crazy eye migraines where he couldn't see properly, which doesn't sound pleasant. Re-enters the series, scores the last 3 goals of the series for the Leafs, including, you know, getting them through that game 6, giving them a chance to win game 7. And then, you know, has that moment with Mitch Marner on the bench, basically grow up. You know, which I think is a good message for everybody, honestly. Like it at this point in time, there's no point in crying. There's no point in yeah, butting. There's no point in like, it's hard. Like it is friggin' hard to win in this league. You see it. It's just as hard for every single team, honestly. Like I just don't buy this notion. It's somehow more difficult in Toronto or a place where there's like a few more microphones and social media is a cesspool. But other than that, like the Leafs don't get any excuses. And so I like William Nylander start to finish this year. The only other one that really stood out was Ilya Samsonov, actually, without difficult questioning. Like he took ownership. He's like, I allowed too many goals in the series. I understand why they put Joseph Woll in. Like, it's not my first time going through this. Like, I wasn't good enough. Like, I still think the Leafs could benefit from more of that from more of their players. That being said, if they don't believe that, I guess if you're saying it, you don't believe it, that doesn't mean anything anyway. So I'd actually like them to believe that a little bit. I'd like them to look at it and not go like, oh, we were 1 goal short, so we were close. I'd like them to look at it and be like we didn't get the job done. I'm someone who's paid a lot of money. I'm counted on to score that goal. Like we didn't make enough plays. That's on me. Like I've got to find a way to make that extra play next year. Like I wish there was a little bit more of that attitude, but you know, that doesn't seem to be there. This is the other part. There's a complacency that's set in here. There is a level of complacency because it is the same. And these guys do have no movement clauses and they do have, you know, big contracts and they have had lots of individual success. Like I'm not taking any of that away from them. Mm-hmm. But I feel like they almost accept losing a little too easily. I'm not saying they like losing. Don't get me wrong. Like it's the nuance there is important. It's sort of like I said at the top, these are all great players. Like that's not what I'm getting at, but there's something about the mix that they have not broken through, right? There's something missing. Or else we wouldn't be discussing the same thing. We wouldn't be in this
discussion, yeah.
And so I just feel like they need a shock through the dressing room. They need something. And I'm not talking about like someone like Ryan Reeves changed your dressing room. And I think Ryan Reeves, honestly, was a huge positive this year from where he started to where he ended up. But because he's a loud personality, because he's not afraid of, I don't think behind the scenes afraid of a little confrontation or calling someone out. Like I think that he helps change a dressing room, but I think they need a lightning bolt fired through there. And I look back, you know, the year Florida won the President's Trophy, gets swept by Tampa. And obviously circumstances like this don't arise every year, but they traded Jonathan Huberto. Like the other side of that Tkachuk trade is like, that was their guy. Like he'd been with that team for a long time. He'd been their best player for a lot of years and they made a gutsy move. I know it's worked
out season two.
Right. And I know it's worked out great. So you might say, well, you're just saying that with the benefit of hindsight, but like in the moment, there was a world where, you know, Matthew Tkachuk wouldn't excel the way he has in Florida. Like it's worked out perfect from the Panthers' end. But I'm saying that the fact that they went through that year where they had tons of regular season success, their playoffs were disappointing. They made a really difficult call on a player that they liked and a person that was good to their organization. Like, I think the Leafs are there. Now, do I see a Matthew Tkachuk for them to add? Probably not. And so that is the other part of this is, you know, I guess if you're making a bad trade and you're trading away someone like Mitch Marner, you know, that doesn't really accomplish what I'm trying to get at here. But I think they need a massive shock to the system. And I'm not sure changing a coach alone does that. I think it involves really changing the stakes for the key players in the dressing room. And so, you know, look, that's a big job. And, you know, players earn no movement clauses. The Leafs have given them out like candy. The problem is, you know, again, Brad Treliving might be sitting here thinking a lot of the same things as I'm saying, and there just might not be an action item if you've got a player that says, I'm staying. My contract pays me until June 30th, 2025. I'm staying until that day.
I don't blame him for that. Any thoughts on what was said from Matthews about how he tried to describe what he was going through in the series? He didn't really give us too much detail, but just the fact that he wouldn't do that is interesting.
It is interesting. I don't know why. Like, I haven't dug in on why he didn't do that. I mean, it's, you know, typically teams, their general manager or whatever will come out and list the injuries. Like Julian Brisebois did that in Tampa. I don't know if you saw, there's 10 or 12 players that had some form of injury. He like detailed when they suffered the injury, the nature of the injury, when they might've been back, all that stuff. I think in general, quite honestly, the Leafs could benefit from a little more transparency with this stuff, just because I think there's so much rumor and innuendo and bullshit that goes around because there's a vacuum of information. Obviously, I'm a little biased here. I'm a reporter. It's nice to know things. That's part of our job. So I will acknowledge my bias and say that, you know, I just think a little clarification more than what we got would have been helpful. That being said, no one is suggesting at all that Matthews wasn't playing inhibited at the end of that series. He did get back for Game 7, made a nice play on the one goal they scored, you know, gave his best under the circumstances. But yeah, I mean, Nylander, pretty twice actually, right after Game 7 in the dressing room, and then again yesterday at the media veil, went through the sort of the fact that he had these migraines. They weren't sure initially if it was a concussion issue. He was saying they're still not entirely, like, they can't be entirely sure, but he had to wait until he had no more symptoms and he actually couldn't see for a time with his migraines. You know, he's played with a tinted visor for a couple seasons now and has talked in the past about having migraines, so it's not necessarily a new issue. It's just one that cropped up at an unfortunate time for him and for the team. But yeah, I don't have a lot of deep thoughts on Matthews. I mean, he had an unreal season and got at the wrong time. He got sick and he got injured and couldn't be the kind of factor in the series you'd like. I mean, he still gets what? I guess he played technically 5 games. He had 4 points and, you know, won them Game 2, certainly on his own, or a big chunk of it was him, you know, sets up the one goal in Game 7. Like, if they had a one Game 7, we're talking about. It's just funny how the alternate history here is different, right? Like, Sheldon Keefe brought this up, but it's true. We're talking about how the Leafs, let's say they win in overtime. The Leafs win 3 straight 2-1 games facing elimination without their best player for 2 of them. You know, we're talking about how they figured something out. We're talking about how Matthews battled through injury to get back. You know, that's
and you'd be on a beach right now doing this episode.
Yeah, I'd be like burnt from my first run down in Fort Lauderdale and didn't put on the right sunscreen. You'd be making fun of me for looking like a tomato while I'm making fun of you for getting suspended in ball hockey.
You'd be wearing a dress shirt outside, sweating and dripping while you have your outside setup.
Oh, man. Where was that again?
It
was at the GM's meeting.
Yeah. That's one of the funniest things.
Oh my God. That was
Pierre LeBrun taking that photo of you from how many feet away.
That was humiliating. But I mean, sometimes you just got to, You got to go to the dirty areas to get a pod done, man. Sometimes you just got to do what it takes.
Clearly. I appreciate it. You looked like a kid doing a PowerPoint presentation outside. Some kid doing some presentation. So, okay, last thing, and then we'll get to some of the other topics. So, any thoughts on the Mitch Marner quote heard round the world? We're kind of looked at as God tier. Can you add more context to that? And just your thoughts on that quote that's gone around and the Toronto Sun cover that has since... I still can't believe that was... Like, you shared that in the group chat yesterday. I still can't believe that's a real cover of... It's really tough for me to describe.
The Toronto Sun has been on a heater through this series. I don't know if you noticed all their covers.
I don't know if a heater...
scorching hot takes.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of describing it.
After a game 2 win that made the series 1-1, they had the Invisible Man with Mitch Marner.
That actually was pretty cool.
When they went down 3-1, they had Canishan, and it was like a Shanahan in like a garbage can. They had Mitch and Moan at one
Mitch
point.
Mitch and Moan? He was, what?
Was on the head. Like, this is all in the last week or 10 days. And then I'll say this. I get why there's lots of dunking going on with Mitch Marner right now. Yes. I understand it. He needs to be better if the Leafs are going to have success. He had 3 individual points in the series. None of them really that consequential in the end. And, you know, that's his worst performance in 8 playoffs individually in terms of just sheer production. There's obviously more to his game. He's part of their penalty kill, and they did get some big kills late in the series. He's also part of their power play along with the other top guys, and that just didn't get the job done. Probably the main reason they're not still playing is that they were 1-for-21 on the power play in that series. All that said, I just think Mitch misspoke, honestly. I think what he was trying to say is he wants to stay in Toronto. He loves the way he's treated here. People, you know, make him feel like a god, like make him feel so great. Like, I think he just, it came out the wrong way. And I get why in this world, it's sort of a gotcha world that everyone goes nuts on that quote. But I'm actually willing, that didn't bother me. Like, I'm willing to give him a pass on that or just say like, okay, like... If you've ever heard me ask a question, I've botched a few questions over the years too. Like, sometimes the words just don't come out right of your mouth. Like, you have them in your head and they just, they come out in the wrong order, or they come out in a way you don't intend. So I'll give Mitch a pass on that one. I won't give him a pass on the fact that I do think it is time for a change with him, but I also don't think he wants to stay. I don't think he's at all inclined to waive his no movement clause. So I do think he'll be back, but I think both he and the team could benefit from a fresh start.
Okay. And that's going to do it for a massive version of Leafs Corner.
Yeah, we'll that was like it... Leafs Pod.
Leafs Pod, which normally we leave to Jonas Siegel and James Myrtle to do.
I will say, though, the week after the Leafs get beat out is like Super Bowl week in Toronto.
What do you mean by that?
I just think there's a lot of enthusiasm for discussing changes, for picking through the wreckage of another lost season, through Fair. Fretting about the future. Like, there's, you know, it's become an event. As much as like I think that's kind of silly to say. Like, I don't know if any team's media, like, we will be pumping out stories at The Athletic for at least the next 10 days on the Leafs. Like, at least. And I'm not talking one story. Like, it's like Josh Cloak and Jonas Siegel doing their normal thing. I'm weighing in there too. You know, maybe James Myrtle. Like, it will
Sean
be.
Sean McAdoo. Like, he's been on this too.
Like, a lot of people ask you, like, what are you doing for the second round now? It's like, there is no second round in my life, man. My second round is picking through the parts. It's just a fact of life anyway.
It feels like the opposite of a Super Bowl, because the Super Bowl, it is an event. But, you know, everyone's happy. People are asking silly questions. It's like a week-long media blitz. In this case, it's basically the equivalent of millions of vultures descending on a dead carcass in the middle of nowhere and picking out whatever flesh is left.
Did you just call me a vulture?
Well, not maliciously. Not maliciously.
I mean, it's a fair comparison. People care about this team, though, right?
They absolutely do. I didn't mean that. By the way, I do not mean that maliciously to you or any of my Toronto media friends. But, like, that's literally what this is. The team is dead, and we're just going to keep picking at it and picking at it and picking at it and picking at it until we get enough flesh, and then we move out of here. That's what's going to happen.
The Leafs have the biggest fan base in the league, I believe. I mean, part of it is they're just an original six team. Toronto's the largest.
They're definitely the most noticeable.
In Canada. I just think it's the biggest numbers. I mean, it's just numbers at a certain point. It's not, I'm not saying that it, like, Toronto's the biggest city in the country. Canada is the home to the game. The most NHL players come individually from the GTA, like, because it's just a factory around here. Like, I'm not saying it's all good, but there's, you know, the point is people want answers. Like, people want to celebrate a Leafs Stanley Cup win before they die. And everyone sees a loss like they saw in Boston, and they're like, man, it's at least another year. And I don't know how much time I got left. So, I mean, even Joe Bowen tweeted that. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't see that.
But Joe Bowen, you know, he was sort of an end of season tweet. Thanks everyone for engaging. He's like, I don't know how many years I have left. Like people just want them to get it right. Right. They actually play in arena. They play like a montage of players. And I can't remember the song, but like the catchphrase of the song is like, this time we're going to get it right, or something like that. Something along those lines. Like, people just want them to get it right. And so that's why it becomes our Super Bowl week, is because everyone has an opinion and wants to debate about how they can get it right, what needs to change. And look, they're right back at the drawing board, man. 16 playoff wins in 5 years. That tells a story. Like, I think we can get lost in the fact that, yeah, they almost moved on to round two. Well, getting moving on to round two, you're still 6 weeks from the cup. Anyway,
you still only had like one series win in the last how many years? Like, that's not good enough for the core.
Since 2004.
Like, anyway.
Give me one series win in at least 21 years.
Like, there are kids who were born in 2004 who have become Leafs fans now. Like, anyway, we've picked at the carcass enough.
Yeah, there's kids that were born in 2009. There's kids that are Leafs fans that don't remember 2013. That's probably a good thing. That thing inflicted a certain amount. That thing inflicted a certain amount of trauma.
I think it did.
Do you know what's funny? Do I know a quick story? So
yeah, please.
In the lead up to Game 7, obviously it was the fourth Game 7 the Leafs have played in Boston since 2013. I was trying to do a story with former players from those Leafs teams. Granted, it was on one day's notice. Like, they won on Thursday night. I was waking up and flying to Boston Friday, and the game was Saturday, so there wasn't a lot of time. But I reached out to something like 12 or 15 players that played those previous Game 7s. Only two agreed to speak with me out of 12 or 15.
Jeez.
One didn't call, like, after agreeing. The other got back to me too late. Like, I don't think it was malicious, just, like... But, like, the point is, and I'm not hating on the guys, but I just think those Game 7 losses for those Toronto players, like, still years later, guys that aren't part of the team anymore, many of them aren't even in the league anymore, just don't even, like, they just want them to go away. And honestly, I think it was 16 new players or something like that just got their first Game 7 with the Leafs. If I'm doing that same story in 10 years, those guys aren't going to want to talk to me either. Like Boston has done something. If you've played for the Leafs, like, losses at TD Garden. Anyway, I'm just sharing that. It's just interesting. Like, all these former
Leafs
guys,
interesting story.
And guys that I wasn't, like, trying to, like, pin the Game 7 loss on. Really, it was more like, what's the atmosphere like? What do you remember? Like, how can the team have success? All those sorts of things. And there wasn't much. There wasn't much offered there.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Guys, I live in Calgary, and you might not know this. It's like one of the sunniest places in the world, and I need quality shades built to last. Big shout out to our friends at Shady Rays, who have us covered with premium polarized shades that won't break the bank. You might not know what Shady Rays is. It's an independent sunglasses company offering a world-class product rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. Their shades, just like the ones I'm wearing right now, have durable frames and crystal clear optics, making them the perfect choice for all outdoor adventures, especially for people like me who live out west, who have the opportunity to go out and hike and take in the sun. And having these bad boys really makes a difference. Plus, if your shades ever go missing or take an unexpected hit, they have the most insane protection in all of eyewear. Every pair is backed by lost or broken replacements. And if you don't like your shades, exchange them for a new pair or return them worry-free within 30 days. There's no risk when you shop. Their team always has your back with personal and fast support. And right now, if you go to ShadyRays.com and use code Johnston, you get 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. Two or more pairs off polarized sunglasses. 50%. Like, that's a really good deal. All you have to do is go to ShadyRays.com and use the code Johnston. It's CJ's last name. It's easy. And you can get yourself 50% off on two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. Okay, let's do a quick run through of the rest of the playoff picture before we get to ask CJ. We did spend a lot of time on the Leafs. Let's talk about Travis Green, who is expected to be Senators head coach named
Hang
this
on.
Week.
Breaking news.
Whoa.
Kucherov, McKinnon, and Connor McDavid are your three finalists.
For the Hart Trophy.
Hart Trophy.
That's not completely surprising to hear. It seemed like it was going to be a three-headed monster. That three-headed monster. Wow, okay. Chris Johnston literally put that tweet together as I'm talking. But yeah, it's not a complete surprise. It's not a complete surprise that it is those three players.
No, but it just was announced, and since we're recording the pod still, we might as well touch on it quickly.
Da-na-na, da-na-na, breaking.
I actually had Austin Matthews in my top three. I didn't have him one. But, and I know, look, there's no bad choices. We went over this late in the regular season. Like, I don't think Kucherov was my number one pick. So.
Am I allowed? I mean, I could say my number one.
Yeah,
pick.
We're not supposed to go through our whole ballot because someone could add them all up and really figure it out. But.
Oh, okay.
But you can say your number one. Just don't go like, here's my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because someone can start adding all the math and whatever.
Okay. Nathan McKinnon was my pick. I just thought he was an automatic point guy at home. He had that 35-game home point streak. Had a career season. I just thought what he did this year couldn't be denied. So that's my pick. Anyway. All right, cool. We now know the Hart finalists, but let's get to Travis Green, the expected new head coach for the Sens. What are your insights on the coaching decision by the Ottawa Senators? Not sure if it's that popular of a decision right now.
Well, I don't think that's entirely fair. I haven't taken the temperature because I've been sort of tied up with Leafs Media Day and all that.
Right.
You know, but I'll tell you this. The Sens did an exhaustive search. Like, exhaustive. I think they considered everyone that they could possibly consider. They talked to a lot of people. I know Craig Berube was one of the ones they were talking to down to the end. And... you know, they end up going with Travis Green, who I think
is something else breaking.
Darren Dreger says Macklin Celebrini and Adam Fantilli are leaving Team Canada at the World Championships.
Oh, that's odd.
Celebrini, I know Macklin Celebrini is the draft lottery.
And yeah, so Celebrini is supposed to be in studio for the draft lottery that's supposed to take place Tuesday evening.
Yeah, there you go. Pierre-Luc Dubois, Nick Paul, and Brandon Hagel have all been added.
Okay, that's... So why did those two... That's a very interesting...
anyway, sorry.
News just popping... No, please. It's normally when that happens, it's like, okay, something's coming.
The thing is, I don't know enough about it, and so I don't want to even guess. There could be just an injury or something, right? Like... Obviously, players at the World Championships don't want to get injured, even if it's a minor thing. It might be best to shut it down. So, like, I don't want to even guess what's going on there. But anyway, back to Ottawa. The exhaustive search, as I mentioned, and you know, I think Travis Green did a lot of good things in Vancouver, quite honestly, and showed an ability to work with early career Quinn Hughes, early career Elias Pettersson. And so, as we get ready for a Vancouver Edmonton series, like, Travis Green's fingerprints are on this Vancouver team that's had a lot of success this year. I mean, full credit to Rick Tocchet. I know Bruce Boudreau was there in the middle too, but you know, Green was there for years and had these guys early in their career. So when you have what is still a pretty young Senators roster, I think definitely needed a new voice, might need a little bit of tough love. I think Travis Green sets up well as someone to do that. And so personally, I don't see any issue with the hiring or have any real concerns.
I'm going off of reaction when I say it's not a popular decision, and that's not me editorializing for what it's worth. Do we have more breaking news?
Dreger, my colleague Darren Dreger from TSN, follows up and says, both Macklin Celebrini and Adam Fantilli were initially accepting their invite to the World Championships with the understanding they may not have a roster spot if more experienced players were made available. Both were also given the opportunity to stay in Prague or return home.
So this is just because, I mean, we see there are three veteran players added to the squad. So this is literally just, they're basically given conditional invitations.
Yeah. And that's it. To be honest, every country does this. It's a hard, I think you get to register 25 players total in a tournament. So you can add players as it goes along. Obviously those that get beat out. But you know, right now there's international games going on with Sweden and Finland. And they're playing with like domestic league players who will ultimately be replaced by NHLers when the real tournament starts. So this is not out of the ordinary. It's just, you know, obviously Celebrini and Fantilli are young kids with a lot of eyeballs on them. And so I think it makes a bigger headline in Canada.
Okay. Rick, do you want to get to Winnipeg, or did Darren Dreger say, every time you look off and you look at your phone, I'm like, oh God,
this is terrible. I am sorry to those of you out walking your dog right now. This is just terrible to listen to, but you know, the dangers of recording during the day as things happen as we're recording. So
that is true.
So look, Travis Green ends up in Ottawa. We're getting a little bit more coaching. Like the carousel is still spinning pretty significantly, but there's starting to be a bit more clarity, right? I mean, I mentioned yes. Berube there. You know, I think he's certainly had some discussions with New Jersey and is a possibility for the Devils. You know, this morning, the St. Louis Blues confirmed that Drew Brandister will be back, have the interim tag removed. They did a bit of a search after their season and have given him a 2-year contract. So that's not a ton of job security. I think really what that tells you is he's got next season for sure. And then, you know, they'll reassess at that point in time. You know, LA has a decision to make with Jim Hiller. I think they liked actually a lot of what they saw from him as an interim coach, but need to decide what direction they're going. You still have openings. Help me out off the top of my head. I mean, potentially Toronto, Winnipeg has an opening now.
We was going to get to Rick Bowness, and the fact that he announced his retirement this week.
Yeah. And you know, they've had Scott Arneal on their staff, who's an experienced guy, but I don't think it's a slam dunk. He gets the job. And so the Jets are going through a process. I mean, this has been an insane amount of coaching turnover.
Seattle's got an opening after Dave Hakstol was let go.
Yep. And we'll see if there's any more. I mean, who knows? I mean, Rod Brind'Amour, it sounds like he's going to get his contract done in Carolina, but if he doesn't, I mean, first of all, he becomes a pretty attractive candidate to other teams, and obviously they would have a hole to fill there. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts right now around the league. It's a fascinating time. You know, for Rick Bowness, one of the real gentlemen of the game, I don't know if you saw his press conference, but it was pretty emotional yesterday talking about how he hopes to have impacted the lives of his players on and off the ice. I think based on the reaction and those I know around the league, I mean, he really was a treasured coach. I mean, he coached more than 2,700 NHL games. The biggest percent of that was as an assistant coach, and I think he was often kind of you know, the supportive type for his teams. I mean, everyone has a different role usually on a coaching staff. And, you know, Rick's someone who's very well respected in the game and made the decision to retire. And, you know, frankly, I know the season didn't end the way the Jets would want with how quickly they went out and the way they went out against Colorado, but they had a pretty good year for a team that I don't think many were predicting would make the playoffs. And, you know, Bonus obviously had a big hand in that.
Absolutely. Do we still have a few things before we should get to ask CJ? Do we want to talk about Oilers Canucks? Do you want any thoughts on Macklin Celebrini? Which topic do you want to take first?
We'll do Oilers Canucks. I don't know if hockey Twitter can handle this. This is the series that has, I just have this idea. It's going to be a war on social media.
Oh, I think it's already started.
It's already started. It's too bad we have to wait 6 weeks for this series to start. Like, I feel like they should already be playing games in this series by now.
You're right. You're
feels like
right.
Everyone is predicting the Oilers are going to stomp them. I'm not so sure about that.
I think I'm starting to get the sense we're sleeping on the Vancouver Canucks and how they've played this year and how committed they are to certain fundamentals. And if they get their goaltending back, right, like, they could.
It really was not an inspired first round win over Nashville. Like, some of those games were a real slog. But they found a way to win them. And I think defensively, they do some interesting things. It's unfortunate they're not going to, more than likely, you know, have Thatcher Demko in the crease. You know, that is a wild card. Although Artur Seelovs came into the last series and you can't pick apart his performance. He's just a goaltender that's a little unproven. He's only 23. You know, obviously going to face a lot of firepower from the Oilers, a very dangerous power play. So I see why Edmonton's the favorite, but I think it's going to be a closer series than what I seem to be sensing in the, you know, what's the streets are saying. I'm not sure I buy it all.
I don't even know if you know what the streets are saying. Not them beyond the hockey streets.
Well, it feels like the streets are saying like this, like, why even contest this series? It's over before it began. But I think it's going to be close.
I'm kidding with the streets. But no, you're right. Like,
I'm picking Edmonton, but I think it's going to be like a 6-game kind of series. I don't think they're getting swept or anything like
no,
that.
No, there's no way this is going to be a sweep. No way this is going to be a sweep. This should be 6 or 7 games. But you're right. Yeah, there's a lot of people. I've seen the predictions from ESPN panelists make its way through social media. I believe Ryan S. Clark might be the only ESPN NHL journalist at the company who thinks the Canucks could win that series. And if Ryan Clark ends up being right, well,
legend.
Good on Ryan. Legend. Absolute legend.
I'm picking Dallas over Colorado, too. Sorry, producer Drew.
I picked Dallas to win the cup, so I gotta stand on that. I'm picking the Oilers to win to beat the
Canucks. Wow, we're boring. We agree on everything.
Yeah. What a terrible thing to have on our show. We agree with everything. Awful. Terrible.
I have Carolina, who I know are down 1-0 in the series as I record this, and Florida in the other round.
I have the Rangers. I picked the Rangers to go to the conference final anyway. Well, no, I picked them to go to the Stanley Cup final, so the Rangers have to win. And I'll say Florida over. Well, last episode I said the Boston Bruins or whoever was going to win that Leafs Bruins series would be food, and the Boston Bruins walloped the Florida Panthers in game one of their series. So,
old takes exposed.
Yeah. Don't get in the business of predicting stuff, kids, because you will look like an idiot when you get stuff wrong. Anyway, one last one. Draft lottery tonight. Who do you think deserves Macklin Celebrini the most? Not who do you think is going to win, because the odds are there, but who do you think of all the franchises who have a chance at him deserves him the most?
I have to take issue with deserves, because it's like you're saying, like, who sucked with the most integrity or something? Like, all these teams sucked this year.
I mean, you could take it as that. You could also just do more of a bird's eye view and you look at everyone's teams and you're like, you don't even have to look at just this year. You can just look at their collective histories.
As a storyteller, okay, I will say I hope he winds up in San Jose, just with the whole tie with his dad working for the Golden State Warriors and, you know, Steve Kerr and everyone there being behind him. I think that he could offer a real boost to the Sharks. The Sharks are 2 years away from being 2 years away as it is and need a lot. But this would be a nice start for them. It would be cool for Macklin Celebrini and his family. And I think it'd be kind of a neat story if he was playing in that marketplace. So, you know, and the Sharks also, it's not like this is an organization that's picked first overall a whole bunch or whatever over the years. So
yeah,
I will say they deserve him the most. But that being said, they were historically bad this year or close to historically bad. So like, it's hard to say deserves. I don't think anyone deserves anything when it comes to tanking to the bottom of the league.
Deserving got nothing to do with it. Oh, I mean, they were so bad when David Quinn got let go. It felt like a mercy fire.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're nowhere. And, like, it's not like next year is going to be, I mean, they might win a couple more games, but they got a long path ahead.
They sure do. Anyway.
They're also looking for a coach. We didn't even mention them. So there you go.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why I mentioned David Quinn, because there is an opening in San Jose as well. Openings around the league. And a bunch of coaches also let go this year before their extensions even kicked in. Really interesting time to be an NHL head coach.
And Sheldon Keefe would fall into that same category if the Leafs do move on from him, because his extension starts this summer, 2-year extension.
Yes. Okay.
Add him to the list if he gets fired.
If that happens. I have bad news about Ask CJ. The majority of the questions that we got are Leafs questions. Normally,
that's
we
fine.
Do try
Let's
to make
do a
it
speed
fun.
Round.
Okay. Dave McPherson, what will be the biggest or most shocking move the Leafs make this season, whether it's moving Marner or letting go of Keefe or Shanahan? Is there something coming out of left field?
I don't know if any of those things are left field, though, are they?
I agree. I don't think any of those things would be left out of left field.
I mean, the only thing that I could say would be out of left field would be like trying to move Matthews or something. And I don't see that happening. So I don't think you're going to get a surprise. There's going to be change. You know, Keefe is a possibility. We'll see where they end up with Marner. But I don't think there's left field in this case. Like left field would be trading Matthews or Nylander, and that ain't happening.
Joe Diamond, if the Maple Leafs want to trade Marner and he doesn't want to move, what can the club do? Do they just let him walk to free agency? Do you trade Morgan Riley? What is the most likely move here?
I think all you can do is try to make it clear that there's no extension coming, that it's in his best interest to move on, that they can, you know, they'll trade him to the place he wants to go and he can get an extension right away. You know, kind of like we saw with Matthew Tkachuk, you know, got an 8-year extension in Florida at the same time as that trade was made from Calgary 2 summers ago. Mm-hmm. That's really all you can do. And if he still says, nope, too bad, then the player has all the leverage. I mean, that the Leafs top players have all the control here. Management can try to steer them in certain directions. They can pressure them. They can make it uncomfortable. They can spell out all the reasons they should do it. But ultimately, the players got to decide.
J-Money 2.0, any early free agent targets for the Maple Leafs this offseason?
Too soon. My brain isn't there yet. Sorry, J-Money. We got lots of shows, though, before free agency.
That's okay. Adil Pickle wrote in Discord, for the next pod, I would love to hear JM's opinion on the whole Drake and Kendrick beef. Holy. Are you up on any of this?
No, I've seen the jokes, but I don't know any of it.
Basically, just it's gotten to a point where it's a little nasty. It's a little basically like it's gone from just like it's not just a diss thing where one guy's saying they're better than the other. There's a lot of nasty stuff being thrown each other's way in terms of some very serious allegations. There have been some entertaining parts, like the idea of, like, this has never happened. I guarantee you in a rap beef where an artist drops a song and it's a whole big production, and then within the hour, the other person responds. That's still one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in hip-hop history. Drake dropping a video for a diss song, which is really good, and that probably should have been his kill shot, and then Kendrick just immediately responds with something that doesn't happen. That's like I can't think of a proper comparison for that. That is wild. But anyway,
I've invested no time in it. I saw there was a shooting at Drake's Toronto house though overnight.
That so is also part
I don't
of
know
the
if
nastiness.
It's I don't know if it's related or what, but
anyway. We should be careful with that because we don't know if it is, but ultimately people are going to lump that into the conversation. So all that to say, yeah, this is a really weird, really weird beef. And I can't look at either artist the same after what's been said about both of these artists. Anyway.
Did you see Nick's Ask CJ question in the chat?
Let's get to producer.
It's a
Nick
different
Ask
level
CJ
of beef.
Question.
But he says, where was CJ when the reporters and cameramen were fighting each other after the Matthews scrum?
Wait,
I was standing.
What?
I was There's standing.
A fight?
Not a fight. I would say there was a argument.
Okay.
It's not on the level of Kendrick and Drake, but there was a lot of reporters in a small amount of space and a lot of cameras yesterday. And there was a little bit of a verbal tussle about who was standing where and how everybody was getting their job done. I was right behind it all. I was ready to jump in if need be, but I wasn't needed.
You were ready to get suspended? Like how I got suspended?
I wouldn't have been suspended. I would have been the peacemaker, man.
Okay. All
right. Right off the rails today.
Right off the rails. Good God. Peace, guys.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the Game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter, @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie, @JK and McKenzie.